Good morning. My name is Dan. Joining me, Dr. Jordan Luskin, urologist at San Juan Urology in Montrose. There's a new treatment option for men with prostate cancer. Dr. Luskin and his team treated a gentleman recently, 56, from Gunnison with high-intensity focused ultrasound, HIFU, another name for it. Go ahead, doctor.
Basically, what it's doing is using focused ultrasound waves to heat the tissue without making any incisions and basically kill the tissue with heat.
And it works?
Yes. Yeah, it works great. Now, again, it's not you have to be an appropriate candidate for it. It's not something that would necessarily work in every single man who has prostate cancer, but it's another good tool to have in our toolbox. And for appropriate men, it's an excellent option.
Mm. So yeah. It worked for this gentleman?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. All right. And so those are the obvious reasons why. What are the effects of it? Are there any drawbacks?
Yeah. So one of the main advantages with HIFU as opposed to other treatments, when you're doing surgery or radiation, you're basically removing the entire prostate gland or irradiating the entire prostate gland. HIFU offers the ability to treat just the part of the prostate that's affected with cancer. So it's a lot like, it often gets compared to like a lumpectomy for breast cancer, right? It used to be that we, for everybody who had breast cancer, you'd take the entire breast out. Well, that's no longer the case, and now you can do very limited local treatment where you're just kind of removing only the cancerous portion. HIFU has that same option where you can treat just a part of the prostate gland. And so when you do that, you have a much better chance of preserving continence and not leaking urine and preserving erectile function. So you can really maintain your quality of life with still a good effective treatment for your prostate cancer.
Okay.
I like the sound of this because my radiation goes through your whole body. And it's like, well, my head is fine and my chest is fine.
Right. Yeah. And that's a point, too, that I haven't even discussed yet. You're right. When you're doing radiation, you know, that beam has to pass through all the tissue that's between it and the prostate gland. So you're going to get some, you know, collateral damage to the tissue surrounding that area. Yeah. So like the bladder, the rectum, things like that are going to absorb some radiation from that treatment.
Mm. 249-5800. Well, let me take a call here. Hello, you're on with Dr. Luskin. Good morning.
Good morning, Dan. I got a question for the doc. Is this HIFU somewhat the same procedure, either similar to or the same as the way you work on a person's eyes when they have cataract surgery?
You know, it's a little different. In a lot of regards, there are some similarities. You know, when you're doing cataract surgery, that's outpatient. Same with HIFU. You don't have to stay in the hospital. You can come in, you get the procedure done, and you go home the same day. But it does need to be done in a hospital or surgery center. It does need to be done with anesthesia. The treatment takes anywhere from about 90 minutes to maybe a little over 2 hours on average. And during that time, it's important that the patient is very, very still. And so anesthesia is really, really crucial for that.
Mm. I remember hearing that when they replace the lens in your eye, they do something to totally disintegrate that lens before they install the new one. And then you have to lay real still, I know, and you have to it's delicate for the physician, but it certainly does the job without any lasting side effects.
So right, right.
That's why I was wondering if this HIFU was as effective as that. And if it is, I don't see why it's not readily welcomed here.
Yeah.
Well, it's new.
It is new. Yeah, it's new in the U.S. Again, the FDA recently approved it in the last couple of years. But it's been around for a long time, actually. The first case of using it was in Berlin in 1991. So we actually have 30 years of data on treating prostate cancer this way. The U.S. will not use – the FDA doesn't use foreign studies. So they won't accept any European trials, which is why the delay in getting it approved here. The FDA needed a significant – long American clinical trial before they would approve it. But I think, you know, it's very popular in France and Germany and has been since the 90s. And France and Germany are, you know, very well-developed medical communities, and they have very good doctors, and their trials were excellent. So looking at their data, I think is very reasonable. Again, I understand that the FDA wouldn't use it, but I think that we can safely say, looking at this point 30 years of data, that this is an effective, safe treatment that provides men with an opportunity to treat this disease while preserving their quality of life.
Mm. Sure. Thank you. Thank you for your answer.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, Bob. So during the procedure,
mm-hmm.
it's in – not as invasive.
Correct.
So what can I expect?
So the procedure itself is, again, about 90 minutes, 2.5 hours, somewhere on that time frame. It's done in an operating room. You come in, you lay down on the operating table, and then you go to sleep. And basically when you wake up, the procedure is all done. There's no incisions. The ultrasound is done through the rectum. So the ultrasound probe goes in the rectum the same way that you can do a prostate examination that way or a prostate biopsy that way. So the good news is actually there's very little discomfort after the procedure because, again, there's no cuts. We're not cutting anything. So you come in, have the procedure, wake up, go home the same day. There is typically a catheter after the procedure, a tube that goes in to the bladder to drain the urine. Heating the prostate gland like that at very high temperatures will cause a lot of swelling and can make it very difficult to urinate for a couple of days until that swelling goes down. So you do have a catheter. That's probably the part of the procedure that men dislike the most, no question.
I've had a catheter.
Yeah.
I had one installed while I was lucid and awake.
Mm. I had a nurse. A nurse told me that there's condom-style ones?
There are. You know, the problem with that is you do have to be able to urinate in order for that to work. And again, with the procedure, it's very unlikely you'd be able to. So, yeah, that's the one downside of the actual procedure is having that catheter for a couple of days.
This is exciting. I mean...
Yeah, I think it's a good trade-off.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, so Dr. Luskin, enough about you. Let's talk about you. I'm 46, okay? Mm-hmm. So what do I need to get my prostate checked?
Well, so...
I feel good.
Yeah. You know, the goal, I think, with any cancer really is to try and detect cancer early when it's in an early stage and can be cured as opposed to just be managed, right? And so the goal is to try and detect this cancer before you have any symptoms from it. We don't want you to show up and say, "Boy, I'm having weird symptoms." We want to find this before it's aggressive and far gone enough that you're having symptoms from it. Mm. So, as far as who needs to be screened, prostate cancer is the number one most common cancer in men. It's the second leading cause of cancer death. I firmly believe that all men should be screened for prostate cancer. But there's some nuances. If you have average risk, so what are risk factors? Risk factors for having prostate cancer, having a male relative, a first-degree male relative who had prostate cancer, that's a risk factor. If you had a male relative with prostate cancer, you're seven times more likely to be diagnosed yourself. If you're African-American, you have a higher rate of prostate cancer. Nowadays, something I'm seeing a lot of is Vietnam era veterans who are exposed to Agent Orange. Agent Orange causes prostate cancer. So we are seeing a lot of those men hitting that age where now we're seeing a much higher rate of prostate cancer in those men. Mm. There's also associations with certain other cancers. Breast cancer, for example. If you have female relatives who had breast cancer, there's an increased risk as well. So generally speaking, if you're at average risk, you don't have any of those things, you're white, you have no family, male family members, then our recommendation is usually to start screening around age 50. And screening is usually with a prostate exam like you talked about and also with a blood test for PSA, which stands for prostate-specific antigen. Now, if you have any of those risk factors, let's say your father had prostate cancer and was diagnosed at 50. You'd want to start screening about 5 years earlier than that. Or if you're African American, we usually recommend that you start screening 5 years earlier. So again, there is some adjustments depending on your risk factors. But in general, around age 50 is a reasonable time to start.
Let me take another call here. Hi, you're on with Dr. Luskin. Go ahead.
My question is, will this HIFU work on other types of cancer? And I'll listen.
Bye.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. So there are some trials that are going on right now using HIFU for other forms of cancer. They are looking at it for certain types of brain tumors. They're also looking at it, I believe, for certain types of uterine cancers as well, but nothing that's FDA approved yet, and I don't know if it's approved for those treatments in Europe either, so I think these are experimental.
So you have to get a specific test for cancer for, like, what if you think you might have breast cancer? What if you think you, you know, like, how do people – I was wondering how people find out they have cancer.
Well, in this state, they have these screenings.
Yes.
MMH has a health screening in, I think, February or January.
Right, yes. And there are other ones, Gunnison, Delta, other health screenings, you're right, where you can go and get, you know, blood work done, and that includes a PSA test. Yeah, absolutely.
It's really I have to do it. But you submit a blood test beforehand, and there are several – there's a plethora of different types of screenings.
Absolutely.
Let me go to line one here. Hello, good morning.
Yeah, I got a question for the doctor. I have a blood work every 6 months. What is a safe level for your PSA reading, and does that level fluctuate? I'm 66 years old. How much fluctuation in that level do we normally see?
Yeah, that's a really excellent question, and it's a very complex one, which is why PSA testing is something that really does need to be interpreted by a doctor. It's not something that just anybody can look at, because a PSA is a protein that's produced by the prostate normally. Everybody has it. That's why there's a normal level. And so there are things that can make that level go up that aren't cancer. As your prostate gets bigger, you know, as we age, our prostates all get bigger. That's why, you know, some of us have older family members who, you know, will tell you, oh, you know, I got to get up a couple times at night to go pee, or, you know, when you go on a long road trip, they need to stop more often. Usually that's because of prostate enlargement in men. And so it makes sense, as our prostates get bigger, they will produce more PSA. So your question of what's a normal level, well, there's different normal levels depending on how old you are. Though what we would consider normal in a 46-year-old is not the same as in a 76-year-old. The threshold of what's the upper limit of normal rises as you get older. Also, normal varies by race, actually. So there's different cutoffs for Asians, for African-Americans, for whites. All of these different races and ages have different levels that we would consider normal. Hmm. And there is, like you said, some fluctuation. If we were to take the three of us here and check our PSAs every day for a week, we wouldn't get the same number every day. There is a little bit of variability every day. So some degree of variability is to be expected. And so in a lot of ways, a single number isn't necessarily as useful as much as, say, the trend over time.
Thanks, Doc. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Dr. Luskin, and go ahead, Johnny. You got a question?
No. I was just thinking about all that.
No, boy, we're real lucky to have you.
Yeah, no,
Dr. Luskin and Dr. Craig Peterson.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Are urologists here in town?
Yes.
But not every county has a urologist.
No. We're a very small field across the country, actually. Here locally, Dr. Peterson and myself are the only two urologists in Montrose County. And then the only other surrounding county that has any urologists is Mesa. There's a group of urologists in Grand Junction. But because of that, we actually cover a geographic area that's about the size of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Pretty vast.
Yeah.
All right. What made you decide to become a urologist? Was your father a urologist?
No, actually. I'm the only doctor in the family.
Okay.
You know, I don't think anybody goes in – most people, unless you – have a family member who's a urologist, don't go into medicine thinking they're going to be a urologist. I actually started out my career thinking I was going to be a brain surgeon. I had my degree prior to medicine in neuroscience. And then once you get into med school and I got to experience the field, I realized it was a really great field and really good fit for me. It's a surgical field, so you get to do surgery if you like surgery. And for me, I wanted to be a surgeon. But there's a lot of stuff that we do that's not surgical, which is really unique to our field. There's a lot of problems that I treat that don't require surgery. But the nice thing is, if you're getting treated for a problem and you fail the non-surgical options, I get to take you to surgery. I don't have to send you to somebody else. You still, I kind of get to take care of the patient the whole way through, which is really amazing. I know you've mentioned, Dan, that you had kidney stones. That's a perfect example. There's a lot of stuff that we do for patients who have kidney stones that's not surgical, about managing the risk factors that you have, sometimes with medicines or with dietary changes or with supplements. But then if you have a kidney stone, I get to treat that myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. On that note, you know, like what about prevention? You know, I hear lycopene. Mm-hmm. And I personally, I can't eat tomatoes directly. I just don't like them.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm supposed to have that stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there is some good data on some dietary things that are probably risk factors. We know that diets that are very heavy in animal fat, which tends to be a lot of American diets, are associated with higher rates of prostate cancer. Compared to, like, say, a Mediterranean diet, diets that's really rich in vegetables, fish, things like that, have lower rates. Also Asian diets, very similar, lower rates of prostate cancer there. Mm. Yeah.
Let me take one more call here. Hi, you're on with Dr. Luskin.
Yeah, if a person's having a CBC this month, will an enlarged prostate or any warning signs show up in that CBC, or would you have to get a PSA?
No, you wouldn't see anything in a CBC. You would need to get a PSA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you might pass on to Dan. There's a officer involved shooting and death over in Crested Butte. And, well, that's just, I know it's 9 o'clock. And
yeah, we reported it yesterday. I still haven't gotten the name, though. But
Well, they reported it on your competition down in Junction.
Oh, okay.
I'll let you know that, too.
Okay. Right. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it. All right, Dr. Luskin. All right, you can see him in town here. They're right across from Montrose Memorial Hospital.
Yeah, the address is 904 South 4th Street if you're looking. And our phone number is 249-2291.
All right. Or urologist Montrose, I think they'll probably just find you, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And this is really important. And, hey, good news.
Yeah, I'm glad to have met him.
Good news. Yeah, Dr. Peterson is great, too, and they helped me, believe me. But it's very important, especially when you cross that threshold of 40, 50, to preventative care. I've got news coming up next, and then Laura Ingram starts at 9:06. This is News 580 KUBC Montrose. My name is Dan. Johnny, thank you. Dr. Luskin, thank you so much.
Yeah,
talk to you next time.
Me.